Accession number 13724, reel 3.
Captain Lowell, reel 3.
The AOC in Malta, Air Vice Marshal at that stage, Sir Hugh Pugh Lloyd, an outstanding commander, had been briefed to attack all ships taking supplies, particularly fuel, for Rommel in the Western Desert. And our brief from Sir Hugh was to sink every tanker that was possible. Indeed, during November, I think I'm correct in saying that Rommel lost 70% of his fuel because all the ships were either sunk by the Blenheims or by the Royal Navy. One of the most dreaded targets that we were forced to attack on several occasions was Tripoli, which was very heavily armed with flak guns. And I remember once going there alone with my crew. We were briefed to bomb the airfields in Tripoli, and we went in having bombed the airfields at 50 feet, and we were flying back over the water at about a very minimum height when my navigator suddenly pointed to our starboard, and flying at about 400 feet were two Ju-52s, transport aircraft. We wheeled round onto these two aircraft, and my navigator lit fire and my rear gunner was fortunate enough in hitting this Ju-52, which we saw crash into the sea. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the other aircraft because when he saw us coming into attack, he broke away and we lost him. Some very horrible things happened in Malta, particularly aircraft crashing on the runways. And I particularly remember one Maryland aircraft that crashed on the takeoff. And it was really horrible because the pilot on board was caught in the aircraft by evidently his foot, and he couldn't get out, and the flames were going all around him, and he naturally was screaming in agony. And I think I'm right in saying that somebody kindly put a bullet into him to finish his awful pain. It was a terrible sight to watch, but I think, looking back on it, I would like it to have been done to me if I had been unfortunate enough to be in that position. The greatest thing that happened to us in Malta was, I'll get the date, hang on a minute, was the raid that was carried out on the German airfield at Castel Vetrano, Castel, C-A-S-T-E-L, Vetrano, V-E-T-I-A-N-O, in Sicily. The whole thing was quite extraordinary. I was called in to Air Marshal Lloyd's office with Wing Commander Dunleavy, the CO of the other squadron, and told that information had been given that there were many Ju-88s and Ju-52s assembled on Castel Vetrano airfield. By this stage of the war, which was January the 4th, 1942, we had between the two squadrons six aircraft left, and Hugh Pugh Lloyd asked us to toss up who was going to lead the raid, and it was absolutely vital that it had to be a success. I was selected to lead the raid and went up to the squadron offices to brief the crew, and when we were told what the target was, certainly a murmur went through all the aircrew, because going to Sicily at that stage of the game was pretty dicey with all the 109s and the Mackie aircraft they had, which were continually accompanying their bombers to Malta. However, I briefed the pilots, and I said an extraordinary thing, that if they followed me in formation, why I said this, God knows, but I said, if you do as I tell you, we will all come back from this raid. And there was a certain murmuring in the corner, and one of my flight lieutenants came up to me, and the briefing was stopped, and he said, Sergeant T, I won't mention his name for obvious reasons, refuses to fly. And I said, all right, I'll see him after the briefing. And I saw this Sergeant T, and he was admittedly in a very bad state, but it was absolutely vital that we had him as one of our pilots on this never-to-be-forgotten attack.
Why was it so vital?
Because all the Ju-52s and the 88s were all assembled there with fuel and stuff to take over to Rommel in the desert. Lloyd was of the opinion that it might be the start of an invasion for dropping paratroopers over Malta, because that was problematical, but it had to be wiped out. There was no question of that. And this Sergeant T said, as far as he was concerned, they could shoot him, but he wouldn't fly anymore. So he was removed from the squadron and reduced to AC-2 and as far as I remember, spent the rest of his time in Malta cleaning the latrines. I mention that because for the whole of the war, he was the only pilot that I had who was LMF, and he deserved everything that happened to him. However, to go back to this fantastic raid, in my opinion, on Castelvetrano, we took off in formation, and I decided to go in at 50 feet over the water to Sicily, and this airfield was about 15 miles inside Sicily, and we would attack in a semi-vic formation of our six aircraft. As we approached Sicily, to our absolute horror, we saw eight aircraft, 109s, flying in semi-formation about 20 miles from the Sicilian coast. And having nothing better to do, decided it was no good turning away from them. We turned into them, and the only thing my navigator and I can think is that they thought we were either Italian aircraft or Heinkel aircraft, because they took no notice of us and pushed off. And to our great relief, we flew on to Sicily and came on the airfield absolutely spot on, which was magnificent navigation considering we'd been flying at 50 feet over the sea. And we hit this airfield, and we then went into liner burst, and we all had 250-pound bombs on board with 10-second delays, and we spread them right across the airfield. And when we left it, I said, we break formation and every man for himself to get back to Malta. And 30 miles from Sicily, you could still see the smoke and everything going up. And the PR people went over, the Spitfire went over the next day to take photographs after the Wellingtons had gone there as an encore that evening. And it reckoned that some 50 aircraft were destroyed on the airfield. And we flew back to Malta, and we had to get there quickly because we were a bit concerned that the 109s would rush off from Sicily and be waiting for us over Malta. But fortunately, we all got back and all landed, and the only injury we got was one aircrew pilot had a shell through his leg. Otherwise, it was considered, certainly in my opinion, the best raid that I was fortunate enough to lead from Sicily. Things got absolutely very bad after that, and we were detailed to the last five aircraft to fly to Cairo, and we took off in the middle of February and flew to Cairo, having completed my 30 trips in Blenheims, having completed two tours.
Have you got the date of that attack on Tripoli when the JU-52 transport was shot down, please, from your logbook?
Yep.
Yes.
On December the 28th, 1941.
Any other details about the raid?
It was my 42nd raid. We carried out a low-level attack on Tripoli on the Benghazi road. We destroyed four tankers and attacked and shot down a Ju-52 troop carrier over the Mediterranean.
Four tankers in the harbour?
No, four tankers on the road. We were going down the road. We only flew at 50 feet, you see, and we got the tankers that were going up with the petrol, the Rommel.
Whilst you were in Malta, did you see anything of the Spitfire squadron?
Yes, the Spitfire. There weren't any Spitfire. There was only a PR Spitfire. That was a photographic reconnaissance one. The Hurricanes, they only had Mark II and Mark V Hurricanes there. And they were quite magnificent. They were so brave, it just wasn't true. And it was awful to sit in Lucca in the trenches there and see five or six Hurricanes go up and take on 20, 30 109s and Mackies, and they'd fight right overhead. And it was ghastly to see these aircraft just shot down in flames, both Germans and British.
Did you meet Laddie Lucas?
No, he came there after me. Just after, I think.
What were living conditions for you like at Lucca?
The living conditions were appalling. I mean, the bombing was going on. The Germans were very methodical. The bombing would be at 9 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and at night. Always the same time, more or less, so you could, more or less, it was so bad that you have a rock, it's a very porous rock in Malta, and one's nerves got so bad that I personally borrowed a pickaxe and dug a sort of cave thing, which I lived in, and the crews were either lived in caves or if they were brave, in the sort of wooden mess we had there. But I couldn't take the bombing anymore after that. I was quite happy to sleep in a sort of a slit trench cave. The food was practically nil. We were lucky if we ate an egg. And but again, we used to go to the Union Club in Malta and have wonderful parties there when we weren't flying. And bar the terrible losses, it was an interesting time.
Any contact with the Maltese?
Not really. The only thing I would say about Malta, that the AK-AK gunners over London should have gone out to Malta to see how marvellous they were. For example, I remember coming back from one flight. In actual fact, it was to Tripoli. I called up 5 minutes before reaching Malta and said, you know, I was coming in to land, was it clear? And they said, no, there are 109s circling the airfield, waiting, you know, for the planes to come back. And I said I was very short on petrol. And they said, all right, you better come in over the harbour, and we'll shoot any down off your tail. And I came in over the harbour, and a 109 came in on me, and they shot him down. Their firepower was wonderful, and they shot lots of aircraft down. But they were so good, you could come in with the 109s literally circling the island, and they would shoot them off your tail.
Did they ever shoot at you?
No. They had marvelous aircraft recognition. They were very, very good.
It sounds as though you were in Malta for about 3 or 4 months.
I was. I was there from October, well, at the end of September until February.
What did you think to the Blenheim to fly?
The Blenheim was a lovely aircraft to fly, but unfortunately it was obsolescent before the war started. That was the trouble. I mean, if you were unfortunate enough to be picked up by an ME-110, that was your lot. You couldn't compete with it. They were faster.
What was maintenance like in Malta?
Maintenance, all I can say is the ground crews were magnificent because I never had an engine failure the whole time I was there. They were magnificent. They worked under terrible conditions and they were cheerful and they kept us flying.
How many planes were left by the time you went to Cairo?
One, I think five. 5 out of 12. And the squad that took over for is rather amusing. The day before we flew to Cairo, and we had to take off at night to get to Cairo because the 109s were so bad circling the island the whole time, they'd sort of pick you off like, grouse shooting. And the squadron arrived the day we left, or the day after, and I think they were wiped out. They were wiped out in about a fortnight, the lot. So we were very lucky to even get five crews back to Cairo.
Was that the end of your operations once you got to Cairo?
Having completed my, what was it, just under 60 operational trips, I was cleared. And they wanted us to go on to Burma, and some wingless wonder in the headquarters there said we were going on to Burma, and I said we're certainly not going on to Burma. We were sent out here to Malta for 3 weeks and we're an English based squadron, and we were told we were going back. And they said, oh no, you're going on to India to fly in Burma. And I said, my pilots are completely aircrew, absolutely clapped out. And I was fortunate enough to run into Air Chief Marshal Sir Keith Park, who was in Cairo at that time. And I explained the position to him. And he was kind enough to get us put on a ship. And we sailed back to the UK.
So he supported your case?
He supported our case. He sent all our pilots home to England, what were left. And what was very interesting, when I arrived back in England in March, my dear wife said to me, you must have been having a splendid time because we didn't quite know where you are because you had no pay put into your account for 4 months. And I said, well, I don't understand that because we couldn't spend much in Malta. And I went into the Lloyd's pay office and said, where's my pay for the last 4 months? And they said, we don't know, it hasn't been paid in. And so I was a wing commander, and I went into the Air Ministry as it was then and saw some senior accountant chap and said, look, where the hell's my pay for the last 4 months? And I said, for your information, one of my sergeants I brought back with me, a sergeant pilot, he hasn't had any pay for 4 months, and his wife's practically destitute. Fortunately, my wife wasn't quite in that position, but what are you going to do about it? He made the classic remark that's been made so much during the war, you must remember there's a war on. And I remember, I suppose I was very arrogant in those days. I said to him, group captain, I'm going to my bank tomorrow morning and I'm going to cash a check for £100, which is going to bounce. And at my court-martial, your branch are going to explain where the hell my pay has been for the last 4 months. And when I went to my bank a couple of days later, it had all been put in, and so had the sergeant's. It's a small incident, but it just shows what things were like in those days.
Was he pleading pressure of work or something?
I don't know. I don't think they knew where they'd lost all touch with us. They didn't know. I mean, there was not much communication between Malta and England.
Now, another job you did in the war was liaising with the US Air Force. Can you tell me about that job, please?
Well, when I came back to England from Malta, I was posted as Deputy Sasso, Deputy Senior Air Staff Officer to Number 2 Group, which was the Blenheim Group, which were getting mosquitoes. And I had been there 4 months when the AOC, an Air Marshal Lees, called me in and he said, Lowell, we're going to give you 18 Squadron. And they're going out for the invasion of North Africa. And I said, may I inquire what aircraft they're going to be supplied with? And he said, yes, Bisleys, which was slightly worse than a Blenheim. It was a heavier aircraft. It was useless aircraft. And I said, no, I don't want the Squadron. And he was amazed. And he said, you don't want the Squadron? I said, sir, with great respect, I've done my 60 operational tours, that's 2 tours, and there are very few people who have completed 2 tours, and I said, I want a Mustang Squadron. I've just seen this Mustang, and so he said, all right, you'll have to go to Army Co-op Command, and I said, that's fine. So I went to Army Co-op Command and met the CNC, and he said, all right, you can have a Mustang Squadron, but at the moment they're non-operational, and you better go on leave. And I went on leave for 3 weeks, and I'd only been on leave a week when they called me back to Army Co-op Command and said, look, the American 9th Air Force have arrived over here, and they're based at Sunning Hill Park at Ascot. We want a liaison officer to go over there. And would you be prepared to do it? It's only until your squadron comes up. And I said, yes, I would be prepared to do it. So I then moved in with the 9th Air Force and was based at Ascot, and I enjoyed it so much with them, liaising with them, that I stayed with them until December 1944 and went over to France with them on D+.